This is Jacinda Sanguera, and you're listening to Light on Conspiracy.
Welcome back to Light on Conspiracies, the second part for subscribers only.
This is Ole Damegård, and I'm here with my dear friend Willem Velderhof. Before we get going, I would like to just tell you a story about how we met, because that's quite an incredible divine synchronicity. I don't know how it works, but in 2009, I was doing a series of radio shows with a radio station here in Spain called Talk Radio Europe. And one of the things that we were exposing were so-called chemtrails. After one of these programs, I got a phone call from a man in Marbella here in Spain saying, I mean, listen, you can't be serious. Are you telling me that there are planes spraying us with chemicals? I don't believe that at all. And I said, well, you tell me. If I'm wrong, I'll be most happy. Having planes above me trying to poison us is the last thing I want. Well, this man said, well, I'm going to call a friend I have in Amsterdam who is a commercial pilot, and he can answer. Took an hour or so, he called me back and he said, well, this pilot said that you're full of it. That is technically impossible to do a thing that you're claiming. And my friend, the pilot, he just didn't believe it at all. So I said, fine, the truth is still the truth. Let's see what happens. I'll be most happy if I'm wrong. That was 2009. Then 2014, I think it was, I got an email from somebody called Willem Laptop, who was at a retreat in Thailand, as far as I know, trying to regain his physical condition. And in the email, it said that I've been wanting to make a difference in the world. I've been thinking about making conferences with different speakers. And then I went on YouTube and I found you, some of the videos you did. And there was something in it I really liked. Would you be interested to do something like that? And of course, I was delighted. So we started this conversation. And this turned out to be you, Willem, and within a few months after we got together, boom, the first conference in Holland took place. After that, we became really good friends, and you came down here to spend some time in Spain. And one night when we were sitting at the terrace outside here, I was asking you how you got involved in this whole thing and how you got sort of awakened or woke up to what's going on. And you said it all started with a phone call I got from a friend in Spain asking me about chemtrails. So he called you. I mean, how incredible is that? I mean, but these are the things that give me hope, because it's just so much bigger than us as individuals. So Willem, could you tell us about your story? I mean, you even went under the name the Toxic Pilot in Holland for quite a few years. Can you tell us a bit about when you started as a pilot, the way in, and what actually happened there?
Yes, well, I started to fly in the commercial aviation. That was in 1995. Regarding chemtrails, that was much later indeed, yeah, but that things were not right. I realized, especially during this war in Yugoslavia, because in the beginning I was flying Dutch troops in and out former Yugoslavia, and we stayed in the hotel with Dutch officers during that war, or it's not really a war of aggression, yes. I spoke a lot with the Dutch officers there, and I got a total different reality of that war than that's what we were presented with on the television back then, and there was no internet we could use. That was really the first time that I really realized that what we were seeing on television and media was fake and used for different purposes, of course. It was in 2000 that I started to develop health problems. And of course, the first period I didn't relate it to flying in directly, but I thought I had a burnout because I had a lot of stressful things going on in my life, on all levels actually. Then the doctor of this airline said, well, you have a burnout, because doctors diagnose with burnout when they don't know the cause of factors. So then I stopped flying. It started with migraine and these kinds of neurological problems, symptoms. But it took me like 7 or 8 years, because I changed my life drastically over the years. I did a lot of retreats, a lot of study of the psyche for my personal search for where my things came from. I changed my life quite drastically, but the health problems were just still there and actually were getting worse. Then at a certain point, I realized I became sick. These health problems, neurological problems, are the result of flying. That took about 8 or 9 years in total that I really could say this is really has to do with flying. And then it took a whole longer period also that I discovered what exactly caused it. And then I met with people around me, because I saw a lot of health problems around me as well in flying. A lot of people who fly, who are flight crew or people who fly a lot, they develop all kinds of health problems, especially cognitive problems, memory loss, but also physical problems. And I was an instructor also, so I saw a lot of crew. I did a lot of simulator training, and I was also was inspector for the government to train airline crew. So I saw a lot of health problems around me, and so I started to dig in it more and more. And then I met some other people, and then I became aware of the presence of these nerve gas components in the airplane, which are caused by this design fault, which causes this contaminated air from the engine coming into the airplane, which is also a part of it, is nerve gas components, organophosphates.
So Willem, when you started understanding that this was an actual problem with the planes and the air in the planes, did you approach the head of the company?
Yes, well, it did, as I mentioned, it took a long, long time, but because I was diagnosed with burnout, then I stopped flying for 3 months, then for 6 months, and then I came in a situation that I had also evidence, because I started to do air samples with me and all kinds of testing equipment in the cockpit, and this was in the beginning, so these were quite big pumps, these air sample machines, but I just took that, and the results of these analyses and tests were all positive on the presence of TCP, that's tricrystyl phosphate, that's an organophosphate, and this is used as pesticide to treat animals and plants and kill their nerve system, destroy the nerve systems, but they are illegal now, but the air aviation has an exemption for it. So, and then I had to go to speak to the company, I had to address this. Yeah, that's also a process by itself, because then you realize, hey, I'm here and I'm now suddenly against this, opposite to the corporation. And I started to see, also became aware that people, especially on the health department, which is completely immoral, that these doctors of these corporations, they were really clearly complicit in it. And I started to realize that, when I addressed this and my discoveries, then I saw the reactions. So I thought, hey, they know more about this. They are instructed. And then it started to roll. And then it became a fight, which resulted in a lawsuit. But I was in such a bad shape that it was quite an intensive time. These people are in this cult, which is the structure of every corporation. It's a cult setting. And these people are under severe mind control and driven by fear. Also, a lot of colleagues I saw with very severe health problems didn't do anything about it, or didn't just ignored this fact, because they have their mortgage, they have the whole life is based on the, for most part of it, of their lives is based on the identification with their job, social relations, all these things. So then I saw the massive polarity of fear by which people are driven in this cult setting, because I was often speaking with people, when we had talks with high-ranked people, and then often when we left these talks with me and my people who supported me, with the question, I always ask myself the question, what do these people really think, that this is okay, or what is it? But now I realize, due to I have much more knowledge and understanding of mind control, that these people are just under severe mind control, and it's very difficult to find an opening. You won't find that, because then you step out of it, out of this cult, and then you're suddenly against it.
The way you felt that both the authorities in the corporations, the higher levels of the corporation, as well as the doctors, they knew about this before you started talking about it.
Yes, they know about it. They know about it since the 50s already, when they introduced this air conditioning system. It's called bleed air. When they tap off air from the engine, that there are would be contaminated air from the engine, fumes from the engine, would enter the cabin. And they just took that for granted in the 50s. There were a lot of scientists warning, you're going to get problems because polluted air is coming into the aircraft with worn out engines. Or, and not every aircraft is the same, of course, but they ignored that. So they are very much aware of this problem. But I mean, there's of course much more behind it even than only this design fault. And most of the people in this corporation, they just ignore this with the instruction from above there because of their false belief in authority. Then they were just instructed from above, we don't speak about this, because if we go along with this, then that's the end of this company, but probably with the whole aviation. We will get sued and the massive lawsuits will come. So we cannot acknowledge this. So they are instructed for these reasons, and as they are all driven by fear and their own job and their own thing, and they're the higher up there in this company, the more they are in it, they will not acknowledge it. But it was very clear that, especially doctor, because I saw this doctor very often, and I did a study on what was happening. Actually, I knew exactly which aircraft was worse than others, and I spoke with a lot of crew, and I knew exactly which aircraft was more exposure to these substances, because it depends on the age of the aircraft, the engine, the cycles. It differs per aircraft. Yeah, this was continuously ignored by health services. So, and then you have, it's like 3-5% of the people like me, they are so-called bad detoxifiers, because of enzyme mutations in my constitution, it's difficult to detox from organophosphates. But that's 3-5% indication. So that's thousands of people worldwide. Only 300 already within the airline I flew with. And these are people who are flying around with severe health problems, or are dead, or are sick at home, and or diagnosed with burnout. And it's classified, the information about health problems in aviation, exact numbers are very difficult to find. And health service is never addressing this, despite the fact there are now even possibilities to do a sort of check. You can do a sort of DNA analyze with a blood test. It's just a simple test, and then you can see if you're, how much you are able to detoxify from certain substances like these organophosphates. And if you know I am a bad detoxifier or I have much difficulties, then you can take more action upon it. But even that, it's just not addressed to any people who will contact their doctor in this corporation.
Because this is much more than just the company you were flying for. This concerns all different airlines.
Yes, the only aircraft which has a different air conditioning pressurization system, which doesn't use the engine which comes from the, or air which comes from the engine, is the newest Boeing 787 Dreamliner, which has another air conditioning system. But the rest all make use of this bleed air system, where fumes, the TCP is a chemical additive added to the oil, so to the lubrication oil. And this is leaking from the engine because it's not possible to have it sealed completely, such a gas turbine engine which is rotating massively amount. You cannot seal that with rubber rings or like that. That's a different system. So it's continuously leaking, and these fumes come into the cabin. And TCP organophosphate becomes even more toxic when it's heated. So these are this is long-term low doses exposure to these nerve gas components. But sometimes you get a high doses due to technical problems when a lot of these fumes are coming in the cabin, and that's a so-called fume event. And that's happening 1 in 1,000 flights. So that's quite a lot with the amount of flights nowadays are occurring. But yeah, they are all involved in this in a way. But I saw around me people dying literally, who were in such a bad shape. And I said, well, you can at least do such a DNA test. And even that, people find it so difficult to take action because of this fear, state of fear they are in running by. And they preferred doing nothing and died literally than doing just simple tests, or not big action like lawsuits, but. And it's interesting to know that the patent of this trichrysyl phosphate is held by the corporation known as Monsanto.
But what is the reason for that TCP to be in the lubrication?
Because they added these chemicals in the oil to raise the point where the oil gets thick, so they keep it liquid, to raise the boiling point of the oil. Because otherwise, in an engine like that, it gets like 600 degrees centigrade. But if it's already cooking at 400, then it's all getting sticky. So this oil needs to stay lubricant, and that's why they add these chemicals.
But are there no other alternatives than TCP?
Well, they are now working with sort of different oils. I don't know the details of it, what's in it, but they could not achieve this way of raising this cooking boiling point other than with organophosphate, triclosyl phosphate.
I know that until I met you, many times when I had flown even quite short distances, I could have like a really bad cold for a week after I got home. And then you started talking to me about that, well, this could very well be part of this exact problem you're talking about.
Yes. I mean, if you understand what nerve gas does to the system, then yeah, you don't want any exposure to this. So the whole discussion in the lawsuit that, yeah, it's only just a little bit, like the same they do in the food, it's just a little bit. But if you being exposed to that 10,000 hours, then it's a lot of nerve gas you are actually breathing in. But jet lag, yeah, that's a made up term by the industry. It's then blamed on dry air, on radiation, time difference. These are aspects in this phenomenon called jet lag. But the biggest factor in it is that you have been exposed to a blend of serious toxic elements like these organophosphates, but also other compounds. We found close to 150 carcinogenic and neurotoxical different substances in the air of an airplane. That's a big thing in jet lag, which is ignored. And now you have the geoengineering, so it's coming from two sides now, the toxic assault.
Since learning these things from you, sometimes I bring like a face mask, a special face mask that can be bought online. I think it's called Angel Wings, the company who are selling them, especially designed for this. Because you say that there are specific times during the flight as well where these gases are leaked out more than during the rest.
Well, yeah, often there's more exposure, but different per airplane. Eh? That's not a rule. But if it's changing drastically thrust settings, you know, if they close thrust before descent or they take off or they start taxiing, then you get sometimes more of this exposure of these components. You sometimes smell it in the airplane as well when they leave the airport and then they start changing from the ground engine to the engines of the plane. Then there's this flow is coming into the airplane, and then sometimes you smell it. It's like this wet socks oil smell. So then you have more exposure to it.
So the air that comes into the plane, does the air leave the cockpit or the cabin as well?
Yes, it's a constant flow. You can select a sort of recirculation mode, then it's recirculated again partly. But there's always new air coming into the cabin. It goes in and out.
I mean, this is quite scary news for many people who are flying. What can they do? Are these masks that I mentioned, are they doing any good?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big help. The air at an airport by itself is very toxic. That's always good to wear a mask like that. But I mean, if you fly a few times or one time per year, then it's not a problem. This is really if you work in the airline industry or if you're doing business or you do a lot of flying and you are also bad able to detoxify or you're already having health problems, then you should be more careful to avoid flying. But for people who relatively healthy and don't do that much flying, it's not a problem.
One of the things that really get to me is like, how is it possible when somebody like your colleagues, you've had friends as well, that has been in such a bad state, you tell them the truth and they just totally refuses to see it and prefers to even die? I mean,
yes.
How is that possible? I don't get it.
Well, it's representative to the overall state in society. Because we are at that stage as well. And the far majority is ignoring it. I was at a social event a few days ago, a marriage of a guy, which was quite a challenge by itself. But then people approached me and said, but Willem, isn't it all affecting you like that? Isn't this affecting you, what you're busy with and all this dark stuff? And most of these people, if not all, they are completely not busy with it because they're busy with their own lives, their stuff, their things. And I said, well, no, it doesn't give me that at all. Actually, it's empowering, however dark it is. Because if I ignore this, and I know that it's there, that gives this internal state of opposition, because I know and I feel that there is dark stuff, but I decide to ignore this and focus my action on self-based, self-serving activities. But this creates this internal contradiction, which is causing self-inflicted suffering. So no, it's very important actually to know that, because the fear is actually nothing more than a force, a contracting force of consciousness. It's a refusal of truth. That's what fear is. And this fear, the refusal of truth, is contracting consciousness and is causing this internal opposition, because our actions are then not based on what we think and feel. And then we have this self-inflicted suffering. So no, it's really very powering, because, and besides that, what you ignore in the outside, you're also ignoring on the inside. That's a natural law of correspondence. It's based on the principle of correspondence. So if we keep ignoring this dark stuff outside ourselves, we also ignoring it in ourselves. And that's what you see, of course, on a massive scale. I think 90% of the people are suffering. Yeah, and it's not a nice thing, it's not, but it's a reality. Because they ignore, especially, the things in themselves, and because of that, they're also ignoring it in the outside, or the other way around. This whistleblower period was a very learning experience, because I saw these dynamics on a microcosmic scale, in this cult, this corporation, which I was a member of, because in the beginning I had this fear to address this to my doctor or whatever. I thought, hey, I'm actually identified with this. I have identified with this cult. But then, yeah, I see these people and they just ignore it. They ignore the truth. That's fear. And love, the other polarity from where it's born, our reality, the creation, is love, which is openness to truth. It's not the form of love of this romantic Hollywood kind of form of love, but it's openness for truth, which is expanding consciousness. And the other polarity is this fear, but most people are not aware of this fear, because it's covered with this illusionary comfort zone based on their identification with their ego, and all the activities they are engaged in is actually ego self-serving activity, and which is of course then, yeah, based on their role, the ego. So the people think, yeah, what can I do without flying, and what do I have a mortgage, and blah, 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 and all these things, which then, yeah, creates a negative consequence in the form of health or in the form of worse problems. If you ignore that, it's not a pleasant truth that your boss or company or whatever you want to call it willfully exposed their staff members with this poison because of financial arguments or economical arguments or fear-based arguments. Yeah, that's a very inconvenient truth, but still is there, and it's very empowering, because then I could start to protect myself against it. When I start knowing about it, not thinking about it, but when I start getting really knowledge about what it is, and I'm a lazy guy, so I didn't want to study this TCPs and scientific reports and what nerve gas does and the history, all these things. I had to work, but it's at the same time it's empowering. But I mean, we are being conditioned in another way, the opposite, to be completely dependent of Big Daddy, of the corporation or other illusionary forms of authority. And that's this fear is only coming to the surface when we are being confronted with it. But most people are in this illusionary comfort zone, so everything which is confronting them with this inconvenience, they avoid, and they don't go there because of that fear.
So Willem, let's go back to how we met. You as a commercial pilot, are there such a thing as chemtrails, or is it just a lot of BS?
Yeah, well, of course, this is a huge ongoing program, the aerosol injection element of geoengineering, the spraying that is now fully operational, full spectrum around the globe. Also, hand in hand with the deregulation of aviation, which made it so easy to get a worldwide covering of planes doing that. But yeah, there is definitely something going on there. But it took me also because when I was confronted by it, what you just described, what you mentioned, how that went, I was not aware. I was not looking at it. First, I thought this is not possible, and I just thought by my own thoughts that I could then just say for myself it's not there without doing any deep research. So when I started to do that, then I became more aware of it. But I was in the middle of this whistleblower period. I was in and out intensive care unit, so I was really not focus on it, but it came into the field, and then I started doing research, then it became obvious. And nowadays, it's, I mean, I'm still astounded by the fact that people cannot see it.
What about your old colleagues? Can they see it when you mention it? Are everybody aware of it?
I had this reunion with, we were with 9 pilots, ex-pilots. Well, I'm an ex-pilot, of course. They are still flying around. But all very experienced pilots, training captains, and all 10,000 hours plus. So they know how to fly an airline, but also how to analyze the sky and cloud formation and cloud dynamics. And because that's where you plan your whole flight on. That's a critical element, very essential element, meteorology. We all studied that at the school, so we know about that. Pilots are experts on analyzing sky and what's natural, as you would expect. But so we were driving around during this reunion, and at the same time there was this insane grit and spraying over our heads and 360 turns, turning the blue sky into a complete white mess. So I said, listen guys, you know what the sky looks like. If you see this happening, you know this is completely unnatural and impossible technically that this is going on here. And then they were looking just to the sky and then they didn't see it. But then 3 weeks later I got an email from one of the guys and he said, well Willem, I just wanted to mention few weeks ago I didn't see what you were talking about, now I saw it. And he realized it, my whole world tumbled down in a way. But and he started diving into it. It takes a while before this calcified mind structures of false belief systems, where we get our reality through, our perception of reality through these false belief systems, then we just don't see it. So that takes a time to decalcify and then be able to see it, to see truth. So it was interesting to see that these pilots just cannot see it.
So Willem, you were telling us about how you, during your time as a pilot, were also flying Dutch military into the Balkan War, and that the stories you were told by this military personnel were something totally different than the official story that was being spread in media. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, well, this airline I was flying for back then, they did the ad hoc flights for the Dutch Defense Department. As a commercial pilot, I was doing also partly sort of military flights with these troops flying into Split in Croatia, and then they were brought into hostile areas. But we stayed there overnight, so I communicated a lot with these officers in the hotel, but also during the flight, because they were all soldiers and corporals and but also officers, and they all said the same. They didn't have a clue why they were there, and they were fighting with the bad guys. Back then, I didn't really realize.
When you say fighting with the bad guys, you mean fighting together?
Yes.
With them?
This war was portrayed as being a sort of the result of this Serbian aggression. The Serbs were demonized as the bad guys, and you know the other elements in on the Balkan, NATO supported, were the good guys again. Like it always goes like that. But they realized when they were there that the Serbian people were actually not these bad guys, and the lies, of course, that were perpetrated also to in the media of these concentration camps, of this massacres happening in Kosovo later on, and these kinds of things, which were completely false after the war. It appeared that these stories, these rape camps by the Serbs, all this propaganda, this demonizing propaganda of the Serbs, were actually false and just used for manipulation of the masses to start this NATO, this horrific NATO war of aggression against Serbia. Which in history, if you know the history of the Serbs, this happened over and over again in history. They suffered horrifically in history, and now they were portrayed again 50 years after the Second World War as being the Nazis. So when I talked to these people there, they gave me a very different version of the reality compared to the television, CNN, but because that's what we saw. There was no internet at that period. And especially as a Dutch civilian, I got more, it affected me more because of these institutions like the International Criminal Courts and the tribunals and our role in it also, and the Dutch government, which is so complicit in keeping up these lies. So I felt very connected to, I always had this strong connection with indigenous people, with the native way of living and the tribal way of living, and the Serbs are nothing else than again an indigenous pocket of a tribal pocket of indigenous people who hold moral standards connected to their geographic area, and these are all parts of a blockage, of a hindrance for these globalistic imperialistic forces, and the Serbs are also people like that. So I felt very connected to that, and I started doing research, and then got more of this activist also because of that rule, of that war. Because it's a very important thing what happened there for us, and it's also being ignored.
Do you know, when you study that war, and if you're aware of the Bilderberg Group, you will see how many key positions members of the Bilderberg Group were holding on both sides or triple sides in this whole conflict, like, and also as peace negotiators, like Lord Carrington, Sir David Owen, the Swedish former Prime Minister Carl Bildt, which when you look into his background, he looks very nice, but is a super, super war criminal, I would say. Also, when you look into it and you find out that the actual peace agreement, peace treaty that was signed at the end of the war was created before the war. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-blowing. Did the military personnel that you flew down, did they have any moral scruples or questions of why they were down there?
Yes, they had. Back then, the army, the units I flew in were just regular soldiers with no really special training or something. What happened, they all become traumatized. We didn't have that special forces teams like we have now, or these kinds of troops. We just send in these Dutch troops. They all had big problems with it, that why they were there, what they were doing there. They didn't understand it, like we all didn't understand this war, what was happening there. It was very obfuscated, of course, and completely manipulated by the media, which presented us with a completely different reality. But they themselves had, this was in the 90s, you know, and then afterwards, the aftercare they get in the army, that's also a sort of mind control operation partly when they leave the army, because a lot of people from the Dutch army wanted to speak out about what happened there and especially what didn't happen there, but they are being very deeply intimidated, and so it's very difficult to get in contact with people who served back then.
I know that over the years you made contact with a very important person in this whole drama called Alexander Dorin. Would you mind telling us a bit about him?
Yes, Alexander, I came, I don't know which days, but at a certain point I bumped into the Srebrenica episode and the lies around it, and I started doing research, and then I found this guy, his name is Alexander Dorin, and he's a Swiss-Serbian researcher. And he did 14 years of research what happened there during the time before this Srebrenica massacre, so-called massacre, happened, and the years before. And he started doing deep research, very difficult, because this is a very difficult area to do research in. It's very much occulted and suppressed and dangerous, especially if you see the work he did. So he wrote a book, different books, several books about Srebrenica and the war in Yugoslavia, what really happened there. It's all evidence-based, so it's not assumptions, but he comes with the primary documents and forensic documents what happened there. And especially he shines his light on the massacres committed against the Serbian people, because these are not addressed here at all. It's still here represented that the Serbs committed all these mass crimes, of which much didn't happen at all. But the crimes against the Serbs were, people were not persecuted for it. So he presents both sides, things, what didn't happen and what did happen there in his work. But if you see the intimidations he got, I did the first interview finally with him a few weeks ago. That's 3 years later than planned. And in the meantime, he was arrested in 2015, to give you an example, and put in solitary confinement for 3 months. He was abused violently by police officers and intelligence people, probably Israeli intelligence, because they are involved in it as well, in these lies. Yeah, so it's a risky adventure. And despite that, he continued his amazing work, like this really Swiss grounded way of dealing with reality and truth. So I respect him really very much for what he did. And his co-author, that's called Zoran Jovanovic, he died in 2013, also during the research of this episode. Of Srebrenica, he was found dead 10 hours after he called Alexander with the message that he found more video evidence that the Srebrenica, to demolish the Srebrenica myth, in his words. And he was found dead 10 hours after that telephone call, and there was no autopsy allowed. I mean, in the next few months there will be a new monument being placed in Limburg for this Srebrenica massacre, which did not happen if you see the evidence and all the information which is there. And there is no evidence of this having of being happened there. The only evidence that was presented is the DNA, numbers of DNA of people who were found in these mass graves around Srebrenica, but this is not being made public for privacy reasons, and it's done by the International Commission of Missing Persons, which is financed by Soros and NATO, and founded by Bill Clinton. This that's the only institute who provides data for this episode.
I know that you did an interview with Alexander Dorin that can be found on YouTube as well. And after that, you received a not very nice email from somebody that says, Dear Wilhelm Felderhof, I work for people whose financial and political interest you are harming by spreading your message. This is a warning. Please stop or measures will be taken. This was sent from Shin Beat. The phone number 12074042604 from the email eroliru4114@youpmail.com. Who is this Shin Beat?
I don't have a clue who this is, but the tone is different than the usual intimidation I receive. But I still don't know. The email is untraceable. So I replied back, what message do you refer to exactly? But it's a different tone setting than I'm being used to. But I could expect that of Srebrenica. Alexander also said, well, that's what you get.
Actually, if you search the name Shin Beat, it's Israeli intelligence.
Yes. The war in Yugoslavia has much resemblance also with the manipulations in the media and Second World War of the concentration camps, what happened there and especially what didn't happen there. But that was also in the war in Yugoslavia. Against the stories of concentration camps in the television, not again, Bergen-Belsen, it's exactly the same. So the powers who are behind these wars and especially the media are the same because they use exactly the same technique. And that you can say that's a coincidence, but there's too much circumstantial evidence that it connects them all to the same powers, of course. It's the same mind control technique. So people still avoid this especially Srebrenica, they avoid it because it's so dark, it's such a deep lie, and that confronts people so with their fear that because this is huge, they ignore it.
So what is the reason, what is the official story of Srebrenica and what is the reason that it's being covered up? How is it being used?
Well, I say it's being used for different purposes. The Srebrenica, the killing of 8,000 Muslims, it's also used for propaganda to justify NATO war crimes, because what NATO, the 11-week bombing on Serbia, for instance, is a huge war crime, a horrific bombardment. That's 11 weeks. Night and day bombing of Serbia. Imagine these people were complete only on civilians, but they destroyed schools and hospitals and bridges with chemical warfare, depleted uranium, the highest cancer rates in Europe, Serbia. This is really a massive war of war crimes, but because people were then having this imprinted in their minds, this Srebrenica, the killing of 8,000 Muslims, where especially the Dutch people, because the Dutch soldiers were supposedly protecting the Srebrenica enclave. So it's used for these purposes to divert the attention on what we are doing, NATO is actually doing, or let alone to do research on that, what we are doing there. But and it was also to cover up the real genocide that happened. That was 2 weeks later, when more than 200,000 Serbian people, Serbs, were expelled from the Krajina province, which was hardly covered on the television. That's the biggest genocidal ethnic cleansing operation after the Second World War, is the ethnic cleansing of the Krajina province under direct control of NATO. This was on direct orders of Washington, and CIA was controlling and giving air support to during this ethnic cleansing of the 200,000 Serbian people from this province, which is for hundreds of years owned, it's occupied by Serbs. So thousands of people died there, horrific, all the people mostly who tried to leave that province. So, but Srebrenica was 2 weeks before that, so that was the only thing what got the attention, freshly imprinted in the minds of people. And this was uncovered by the state, military-owned media.
I want to point out that there's an acquaintance of mine in Sweden called Sakleo C. Bumbar. It's a bit of a strange name, but that is Z. Sakleo C. Bumbar, that has made a four-part series called Yugoslavia, the Hoax War, the Blueprint for a Takeover, where some of it is excellent, where you can see that some of these claimed massacres and so on, it's made with dummies and it really, really low quality. Things that I thought were real as well until I started understanding false facts and opened my mind to how they do it. Here it is so obvious that so much of what we've been served is absolutely not true.
Yes, and exactly the same. It's a blueprint for what we're seeing after these wars, after that war in Yugoslavia. All these wars, all these revolutions we see in the Middle East, in Georgia, around it, and all this in Europe, is all based on the blueprint, successful blueprint of this war in Yugoslavia. Yeah, are you referring to this false flag of the bombing of the market, the Markela market in Sarajevo, which was then supposedly done by Serbian people, but this came actually from the Muslim side. That's what the research shows. But yeah, there are images which don't make sense at all. But today as well, you see very amateuristic footage when it comes to terror attacks, which you can debunk within quite quickly, or just see that it is different than presented, with things which completely doesn't make any sense. Very amateuristic still.
Yeah, same story.
The people are in a more than ever now in a responsive state, so they don't think anymore. A lot of people do, of course, but most people are just locked in and they operate from this lower state of consciousness, so they are not able to think, they only respond. So it's also with truth, because a lot of truths are coming out now, really, that you normally would think, wow, this is a big thing, but like 2-3 a day sometimes, and people just see it and they only can respond, like they really numb in a way. So this terror attack comes then there, and then same with now with this madness about North Korea, that people are falling for this. I mean, some people called me, what's about this North Korea thing? I mean, they don't think about this. They just respond. That's why they don't do research in it. And people are still in this thinking modus. This also with KLM. Then people, you know, with the aviation, the whistleblower period, that people approach me and then they say, do you really think that this is caused by that? You know, they're still in the thinking modus, as if I would start a lawsuit when I think things. But knowledge is almost a bad word. So people think they interact with each other, talk with each other based on their belief system, what they think about things, not about what they know or knowledge about things. But yeah, the same with these kinds of things.
I think it's quite interesting that you, as a former Green Beret commercial pilot, researcher, a whistleblower, have now devoted quite a big part of your life into something called Cambo. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Cambo is a sort of natural animal-based medicine. It's the poison of a frog poison, a tree frog. The poison of this frog has very high medicinal healing qualities. And I started to doing these kinds of things when I was in this neurological damage. I had to do other things than go to the hospital because they wanted to do surgery and they put me with more toxic medication. So I found this medicine as well, and it's coming from South America, from Ecuador, Peru, and from Brazil. It's a boost for the immune system, and it has very high detox qualities. So you put it on, and then it works on all levels, so on a mental, emotional, and a physical level. It cleans the system, and it builds the immune system, and that's scientifically also presented with numbers of studies. It has 9 bioactive peptides, and which go through the blood-brain barrier, and because of that they are going to the receptors, and this is triggering all kinds of chemical, biochemical processes in the system, which are being instigated or support the organs. So yeah, it is a very powerful healing medicine, and it helped me a lot during that period, but also now. So when I started doing therapy work on people, then I often thought, hey, this would be good for this person as well. So then I started to implement it in that, to do it on other people. But it's called Cambo. That's K-A-M-B-O, Cambo medicine. And there are more Cambo practitioners now through the world. I think it has a huge potential, and it's especially nowadays very effective natural medicine.
I know I've tried it, and it sure helped me, even though it was extremely unpleasant while it was taking place. But I know also you inspired people like Max Egan to do these things also. He is now doing it, helping people all over the place as well.
It's also because that's a very interesting aspect of Kamba as well. It's very unpleasant, but this is actually very healing and helpful as well, because we still try to avoid that which is unpleasant. We still want to maintain our sort of comfort zone and avoid the things that are unpleasant. Kamba is a big teacher in that, because you go through this unpleasant stuff, but you're not resisting it so much. And that's also what needs to happen, of course, on a bigger scale, that we face these unpleasant things, these unpleasant truths, and apply our actions on it. And that's what we often avoid, because we want to avoid that which is unpleasant. So Kamba is a big teacher in that as well, to learn to work with that which is supposedly unpleasant, especially for the ego.
So with that said, Willem, how do you see the nearest future here and the future in a longer sight, sort of longer view?
Well, I cannot tell. I cannot look in the future. I mean, it's not a fixed thing. But if we continue on this road as a collective, because that's the thing, we are co-creating with all. We're all in this, and we all have our part in creating the reality we are presented with by the universe. It's not that we create this, but we have put ourselves literally above nature, above the. We have made ourselves gods by making laws or believing in these laws, man-made laws, and we live in, due to that, we live in opposition with natural law, and still we are continuing to do that because we're driven by fear, all these other aspects. So we continuing to do that, living in opposition with natural law principles, and that has negative consequences for the reality we create with that behavior. But I fully trust the universe, and that's the only thing I really, really trust, because she will respond on the behavior, especially we choose with our free will, which is either moral or immoral behavior. And since the far majority is still operated by this ignorance of natural law principles or morality, and still operates from fear, we will continue to see more madness, more regulation, more of the same, because we don't change our behavior in the aggregate or on a really big scale. You don't see these big changes. I don't see that really around me. So in that sense, I'm negative in the sense of an experience we are creating ourselves, but positive in the sense that the universe is just responding. She's just responding according natural law principles. And if we stay living in opposition with it, we create negative experience for ourselves. But for the universe, it's just a response, and that will be always appropriate. And then, yeah, see from there where we then go.
Okay, Willem, we're coming to the end of this second hour, and I really, really want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Would you mind telling us or the listeners how they can contact you or support you in what you want to accomplish?
The listeners can always reach me on Facebook, that's Willem Velderhof, or on my website, that is www.dutchanarchy.com. So that's dutchanarchy.com, and Dutch Anarchy is also the YouTube channel where people can also reach me or send me an email.
I also want to thank you for your courage and your integrity, Willem. You're an inspiration for the rest of us. And with that said, thank you so much.
And so are you. Thank you, Ole. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Light on Conspiracies, the place where truth and love transcend the darkness. Take care and see you soon.
Coup d'etat in slow motion. Connecting the dots between the assassinations of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, JFK, Robert Kennedy, and John Lennon. Now available on Amazon and lightonconspiracies.com. Coup d'etat in slow motion.
Now the question is, what is your voice? know.